Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of China. And this is a special podcast because we are about to come out with a brand new book. By the time you hear this podcast, we will already have it published. If you're listening to this podcast, you can already go on to our website at Underground Publishing. You can look it up on the internet, or you can go to Amazon and buy it there, both in ebook format or published in hard copy. And this time I've brought Bethany Hope to join me for this podcast to share about our new book. Welcome back to the Back to Jerusalem podcast, Bethany. It's good to have you back, and I'm super excited about this book.
We've done a couple this year,
yep.
So this is now our third one, so we'll have done three this year, so yeah, we've made pretty good progress.
Yes, and these books are not just about volume, right? Like the books that we're putting out with Underground Publishing House, it's not just about putting out a bunch of books, but these are books that are actually, they've meant something, they've been powerful. You and I have evaluated, went through the books kind of knee deep in many different books, and we've come out, I think, with some real jewels. We've tried to sift through some of the older books from 100, 200, 300 years ago and pull out ones that just made a big impact during their day.
Yeah, their day and our day. I mean, like you said, these are not books that we read and go, oh, that will have been cool at the time. These are books that we read now and they have an impact today. They have a timelessness about them, I think, which is the whole point of why we want to kind of expose these books to a whole new generation. We've said before, I think, on the podcast that, you know, a good 70% of the work that we do with Underground is the research side. I mean, we just trawl through so many books and so many tracts and you know, so many things to find these, you know, little hints of gold. So they are very carefully selected and very intentionally selected. And actually, just on that, I want to say that for any of our listeners, if there is an author or a book or something that you know of that was written, you know, over 100 years ago, it needs to be over 100 years ago, that you think is really impactful when it comes to missions between China and Jerusalem, then drop us an email because we would really love to look into that. And that does help us. So, yeah, just a side note.
Yeah, I mean, for those that have never heard of Underground Publishing House before, this is an arm of the of Back to Jerusalem, and we are going through older books that are in the archives. Bethany, myself, and the team have been working on a project called Chasing Legacy, where we are going back and looking at the legacy of the forefathers who were a part of the faith, not just 100, 200, but you know, even over 1,000 years ago, going all the way back to the book of Acts, to the beginning of the church. This kind of started a little bit with Chasing Revival. And one of the things that's kind of come to me in doing the research of Chasing Revival and Chasing Legacy is that God created everybody with special gifts. And in that special creation of what we were meant to do and serve in His kingdom, we all bring something to the table. We all bring this special element to the table for everybody to benefit from. And I believe personally that God gives us special nuggets of a view of who He is. And some of us express that view to others, to the world, through science, through math, through architecture, through dancing, through singing, through writing, through poetry, through farming, through politics. Like each one of us have this special gifting where we are able to benefit the entire world. And there are individuals that get glimpses of God that have never happened before, and might never happen again. So there are things that I've never seen about God that were revealed through individuals from 100, 200, 300 years ago that I might never see during my lifetime. I might never understand it if I spent 100 years studying what they had studied, if I spent 1,000 years learning what they learned and experiencing what they experienced. They just had a unique way of taking information that God gave them and giving it to the rest of the world. Some of those voices have been forgotten. Some of those gifts have been lost. And so what we're doing with Underground Publishing is going back and grabbing these jewels that were a gift to mankind that the enemy has tried to hide, that the enemy has tried to get mankind to forget, and bringing them back out to be a blessing to society. You know, today I feel that we live in a world where it feels like this generation is doing so much to tear down what our forefathers built. And when I say our forefathers, what they built is not great because they're our forefathers. What they built is great because they sacrificed everything for the kingdom. And then God blessed them. They fell in line with that promise of put these things first. And all of put the kingdom of God first, and all these things shall be added unto you. So their nation was blessed. Their home was blessed. Their children were blessed. Their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. God is blessing them throughout the generations. And you and I and many of the people that live in the current of those blessings, we can easily take it for granted. We can easily believe that we somehow inherited it by being worthy, by somehow just like we somehow have earned it by a birthright, and we simply haven't. And we are on the verge of losing much of what the older generation, the generation before us, has given as a gift. Because we live in a generation where people are tearing it down. They're attacking the Christian Judaic values in our society. They're attacking the biblical standards in our society. They're attacking the justice system that is built on the Christian Judaic teachings in our system. All these things are being torn down. And the reason I believe that they're being torn down is that Satan has blinded the new generation. And these older writings can open the eyes of our generation. These older writings can give us a different view of God than we have currently. These are not goodies because they're oldies. I believe that they're oldies because they're goodies, and we're bringing them back and preparing these writings, I think, to present to a new generation. That's my feeling anyway.
And I mean, even this book that we're doing today is unlike the other two that we've done. The previous two, A Voice in the Darkness and The Lame Shall Take the Prey, were stories, really, about two individuals. This book that we are now releasing is called The Terrible Red Dwarf, which already sounds pretty different to our other books. And it was actually a tract, so when we first started looking at A Voice in the Darkness, which was the very first book we did, and to be honest, it was the book that launched Underground. You and I both read it at the same time, and it had a big impact on us. And so in that book, Griffith John made reference to a man called Mark Guy Pearce and this story called The Terrible Red Dwarf. Shall I tell the story?
Yes.
Yeah. And he talks about how, so Griffith John is actually in China, and he is handing out tracts, which my experience, I mean, I don't think tracts are as big of a thing as they were kind of 30 or 40 years ago today, but they certainly were. And when I think of tracts that are given out today, they're kind of very short, maybe like leaflets or tiny little booklets or something that's been printed out, can be of great use, but we'd never seen anything quite like this. And Griffith John was handing out tracts, and he had one called The Terrible Red Dwarf. And he went up to one of the many Chinese people around him that were walking the streets, and he grabbed one guy as he was walking by and tried to talk to him. And the missionaries in those days would not just give out tracts and Bibles for free, they would actually sell them, because they started to learn that if we give these things to the Chinese for free, then there is this idea that they're worthless, right? That they have no value. And so they decided, okay, the way that we can actually get these into their hands and get them to read them is to actually sell them, to put some value on it. So he was trying to sell these books, and he goes to this guy and he tries to sell him The Terrible Red Dwarf, and the guy looks at him and says, I've already read that book. And Griffith Stone's like, yeah, he just didn't believe him. He's like, there's no way. So he's like, okay, if you read it, what's it about? And he said the guy just stuck out his tongue and pointed at his tongue. And Griffith Stone was like, ah, yeah, okay, you've read it. And so this is a story that is not for children specifically, but we feel that especially in the generation today, that it will be particularly impactful for children, because there's so few of these kind of stories for kids these days. But it was actually given out as an evangelistic tract. And so what Mark Guy Pearce used to do when he wrote these tracts was he would use stories, kind of fairy tale-like stories, like Aesop's Fables and a little bit of like the Brothers Grimm, that kind of feeling. And he would talk about a kind of moral truth or a moral message that he would embed into this story. And at the end of all his stories, it comes back to the fact that it's based in the Bible. And so that's what this is. Yeah. That's how we found it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I found fascinating with it is that I didn't know that. And I'm sure many people in our audience didn't know that tracts were not always these small one-page, two-page, three-page pamphlets. Like today, if I get a tract, most of the time it's about the size of my hand, maybe smaller. It's a small piece of paper, booklet. That's not even the right word, because it's only a couple pages usually. And it has some clever introduction maybe to the gospel, and they're handed out for free. Sometimes missionaries in China do what's called tract bombing, and they'll go to a village or they'll go to a city like Chengdu or Kunming or Qinghai, and they'll walk in the city and they'll pray for the city, and they'll do these what's called tract bombing, where they just start dropping tracts everywhere on the ground with the hopes that maybe one of them will be picked up. And that works. I mean, I wrote a story about a guy by the name of Tenzin that we worked together with from Tibet. The book about his life is called Leaving Buddha, and his life was saved because he ended up picking up one of these tracts that were dropped from tract bombing. So I'm not saying that one way is better than the other, but I've always thought that tracts were just a few pieces of paper stapled together, super cheap, and given out for free. But the missionaries 150 years ago, they believed that the stories in a tract should be worth something. They were valuable stories. They weren't just they weren't just something that you would give out for free. They were really good efforts at telling amazing stories. And when I saw this story by Mark Guy Pearce, I was reminded of the the Grimm brothers, the Brothers Grimm. Why they're called the Brothers Grimm, I don't know, instead of the Grimm brothers. Anyway, so the Brothers Grimm, which are these two brothers from Germany who wrote stories, from folklore stories from all around the world. So they did things like basically like Little Red Riding Hood, the Three Little Pigs, and they did these stories that went all around the world for children to read. And that's kind of what this is. It's one of these folklore stories that's a little longer. It's not as long as a novel or a book, but it's not short like a one-page, two-page, three-page leaflet either. It's something a little bit in between that, you know, for adults to read, young adults to read, children to read, adults to read to children. And I think this fits right in with this time of year when people, for whatever reason, the autumn setting in, October, cool weather, changing of seasons, changing of leaves, brings about this desire to drink hot drinks and tell stories. Maybe that's why Halloween fits in this month so well. But this book, if you're looking for a book to read to your children, if you're looking for a book to not let your children be involved in Halloween activities, maybe you have some sort of autumn festival and you can sit around the fire and read this book. This is one of those books that they sold in China. Chinese bought it. They found these stories fascinating in the same way that you and I would buy stories from the Brothers Grimm today. Stories that have just made it through the test of time. But these stories, much like a C.S. Lewis, told moral, gospel-based stories using fictional characters and very creative storytelling.
I realized that actually when I talked about him sticking his tongue out, that's not going to make sense if you don't know what the story is. But just based on what you're saying there, and this is a story about the impact of words and guarding your tongue, which of course we know to be a biblical principle, but until you get to the end of the book, you have absolutely no idea that it has anything to do with scripture. And so Mark Guy Pearce, it's important for people to know that Mark Guy Pearce never really left England. And this specific tract went to China and India at least, and was incredibly well known. So he wrote it in England. It was then printed and it became heavily used by missionaries in China and India, and I'm sure in several other countries. So this was a tract that really kind of made the rounds. And yet, it was very, very difficult for us to get our hands on it. The only way, I think that then now, actually, since we started looking at it, it's since been put on a internet archive, but I don't even remember what the name of it was. But the only way I could get hold of it was to contact a library in the UK and have them actually send the scans of the book to us, which we then our team transcribed and etc. So yeah, even though this was such a well-known tract that was obviously so well received, which is why it was so well known, today it got completely lost to history.
Yeah, I really am excited about sharing this book with the rest of the world, because Mark Guy Pearce was very talented, gifted, and I believe called of God to be able to tell these unique stories. And there's something fascinating. There's something that's a little bit of a throwback when, you know, just the wording of The Terrible Red Dwarf. Just the idea of this, you know, sticking out your tongue.
Say, it's the only book so far, and even in the books coming up, this is the only book that we haven't changed the name of, because it just didn't need changing.
No, yeah, that's true. And you bought the original, right?
No, that's a different one.
Oh, that's a different one. Yes, sorry, that was a different one.
Don't give out spoilers.
Okay, I won't. So for this podcast, we had decided we're going to read a little bit. So you want to go ahead and do the introduction and then read the portion that you want to read.
You want me to read the whole intro too?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, well then everyone needs to settle in, because this is going to be a few minutes. Just so everybody knows, the length of the book is 30 pages. So yeah, like you said, it's kind of an interesting, real mid-length kind of book. So I will begin our story at our introduction and read the first chapter. It was July 1868, the warmest month of that year for Hankou, China. The streets were busy, the worn ground underfoot baking in the afternoon sun. Amongst the crowds could be seen a familiar face. The face held a stern look of determination, defying the heat and the crowds. And yet, every passerby the face engaged seemed to be held by its gaze, even if only for a moment. The face belonged to Griffith John. He was well known in this area, having spent most of his missionary efforts in China, calling Hankou his home. When he was not preaching and teaching in the far-flung villages, helping his wife at the girls' school, resolving some conflict at the boys' school, or praying in solitude at home, he could be found here, pacing the streets of his beloved city, distributing tracts to any who would stop. Selling tracks was not always a pleasant experience. The crowds would push in as the streets heaved with people. It had to be done in the midst of a great deal of shouting and rough handling. What's more, the Chinese looked down upon such missionaries who would demean themselves to such a menial task, thinking instead that such tasks should be left to the lower class locals in need of the work. Even so, like many other missionaries of his day, Griffith stood out in the streets day after day. On this particular July afternoon, he approached a man who seemed in less of a hurry than the others in the crowd. Griffith pulled out a tract and tried to persuade the man to take one with him on his way. His reply came as a surprise. The man looked at the tract in his outstretched hand and said, with a smile, "I know all about it. It's a very good book." "So what does it talk about?" Griffith quizzed. "Oh," said he, "it talks about this," pointing to his tongue. And he was right, for the little book was no other than a translation of Mark Guy Pearce's The Terrible Red Dwarf. "You hold that very same book in your hand today. Written in Cornwall, buried in the south of England, this book made its way to the other side of the world, its message reaching thousands in China. It tells a tale of caution, warning against the downfall that can be swiftly brought about by the words that so easily escape our mouths. Perhaps today the tract is a forgotten art." Griffith knew that the tract can go where the missionary cannot. The tract can make its way into the homes of the people, the houses of the rich, the official establishments, even the imperial palace. It finds its way into hostile provinces and witnesses for Christ in places to which the missionary has no access. The missionaries come and go, and their words are regrettably forgotten, but the tract remains, ever bearing witness to the truth. Chapter 1, The Red Dwarf and His Cave. Once upon a time, and not so very long ago either, there lived a little red dwarf. Now, of all the dwarfs that ever did live, this certainly was the one that did the most harm and that made the most noise about it. This was all the more wonderful because he was so ridiculously small. You never saw, you never even read of any dwarf so small as this. He measured only a few inches, a very few inches in length. Inches, not feet, you know, such as the little folks measure themselves by when they want to see how much they've grown. This wonderful little dwarf lived in a wonderful little cave. It was dark, low-arched, and strongly guarded. Then there were two ivory gates to shut him in, and outside these were two other gates that were made to fasten quite closely. There was no other dwarf in all that land that was so secured. And yet, in spite of all of this, there was not another dwarf that it was so difficult to shut up. There was not a locksmith living who could put a lock on that dwarf. They might lock up wild robbers and keep monstrous wild beasts in iron cages, but never a bolt or bar could keep in this little creature, so very different was he from any of his kindred. His nearest neighbor dwelt in a cave that had not any gates at all, and was altogether so quiet and gentle that he was scarcely ever heard, except occasionally in his sleep, and then he was quite off guard, of course. Further up the mountainside there dwelt two brothers, who only let down a thin cover lid over their cave. This was enough for them, except that sometimes, when they had grown old and weak, they set up a pair of crystal gates for their protection. And round on either side of the mountain lived two other dwarfs, whose caves could not be shut up in any way. Night and day, their gates stood always open. So you see how much more the red dwarf was to be dreaded because he dwelt in so strong a home. How foolish it is to talk as if it does not matter what little things do. "He is only a child," people said sometimes, just as if there were nothing in the world when all the time that little child is helping to make all the house what it is, and all the house is helping to make that child what it will be forever and ever. "It is only a little," says the drunkard, as if that little did not begin all the mischief and always meant a great deal too much. "Such a small thing," whispers the temper, "it isn't worth making a fuss about it." And that small sin turns out to be just the small boy that is sent in at the window that he may open the door to the sturdy burglars outside. So, there were many people who said that this terrible red dwarf was so very small that he could not make any difference whatever he did. Yet I believe that this little dwarf was mightier than everything else in the world, with all its mighty mountains and blustering winds and roaring seas. Stay, there was one who was stronger, of whom I shall tell you. But I think there was only one, and then he was a king, as you will see before my story is done. I think we can probably pause right there.
Yeah, I think that that's a great beginning, because now you get an idea of the artful storytelling. And it really does feel so intriguing. Like there's something a little bit, that kind of draws you in, enchanting.
Yeah, it's magical.
Yeah, it is.
There's something about, when I remember when we first found it and I said to you, okay, I'm going to read it. And when we both read the first few lines, it was like, wow, this is that kind of writing like the C.S. Lewis where it just immerses you in the story. And I mean, I thought I was reading a tract. And so to then be faced with that was like, this is a whole other world that we had never experienced before. So it definitely has that kind of real fantasy, mystical, fable-like feel to it.
Yeah, like you're expecting the grandfather to take his seat in a leather chair beside the fireplace and all of the grandchildren to sit at his feet. And he's got his pipe and he's got his sweater and he's sitting down and he's pulling out his book and all of the kids are ready for story time. And of course, that's not the case today, right? Because there's so many entertainment devices, but there was a time. And I think that the time is still there for children around the world to enjoy this book, to be read to them by animated adults that want to share the story and the lessons that come through this story. I mean, you can already see that it's being set up in a way that adults could learn from today. How many times do we compromise on the little things, thinking that if we just compromise on the little things, then there won't be violence, there won't be fighting. Come on, it's just something little, but that becomes the gateway into something much more deadly, much more dangerous, much more unforgiving. It's not just that one little thing that you're compromising, that's only the first step to make you comfortable with moving towards the end goal of destruction. Excuse me. So I mean, that, you get that there
as well. When I think of like, I asked you if you'd heard of Enid Blyton, who is a very well-known British writer. So maybe those outside of the UK are not quite as familiar. Those in the UK will certainly know who I mean, who was one of the most famous children's storybook writers. That there was. And she would write in such a way that, to be honest, the old classic Disney movies used to do, where it was for children, but they would intentionally weave things in for the adult that has to read the book, right? Or Disney would intentionally kind of drop little things in that the parents watching the movie would kind of know what it meant and the kids wouldn't. And Mark Guy Pearce has this really great way of telling a children's like story, but also this kind of depth of truth that he weaves throughout it that is ageless.
Yeah, and this, like you said before, this comes as a trio on top of two other books that we've already put out there. And they seem like they've been selling really good. We've obviously hit a nerve because they're some of our best-selling books that we've ever produced by Back to Jerusalem. Yeah. The first one that we did was called A Voice in the Darkness. Can you share about that one?
Oh, you want me to give an overview?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, Griffith John. So he was from Wales. And he went to Wenzhou, and he was the first Christian missionary that we know of that ever stepped foot. Oh, no, hold on. Is that The Lame Shall Take the Prey? It is. I got confused. Where did Griffith John go?
So Griffith John went into China, spent like 61 years of his life traveling into many different areas inside of China. And he had been preaching the gospel, and he'd written a book about, or a book had been written about his time there that he wrote. He was an excellent author. And A Voice in the Darkness talked about the different places that he had traveled to and lived. So it wasn't just one place, it was several. So he gives you a great overview of China. And he did it with China Inland Mission. And he reveals things in a way that is so beautiful, because it's not just about being in China. Here's the thing that I found fascinating about that book, is that even if you've never been to China, even if you have no vision for China, he talks about God and life and the need for the gospel in dark areas, regardless of where you live, regardless of what day and age. I mean, I read that book. It's been written over 150 years ago, and still I was able to relate to it as if it was written yesterday.
And also, it's not the thing about Griffith John's book, more than any of the others so far, or at least more than The Lame Shall Take the Prey, is it's not as China-specific in that he would write, there are chapters in there, and actually people have written to me about, there's one called The Ideal Christian Life, a chapter he writes, which is so amazing, where it's kind of a theological discussion he has about various things. He kind of really delves into scripture, but he does it in the context of him serving inside of China, right? So it's different than just somebody getting up and preaching on a Sunday morning in the US or the UK or wherever it might be. His kind of theology was shaped by his lived experience on the mission field. And so you just get some real unique and challenging and inspiring writings from Griffith John.
Yeah, so just looking at his list here, he started off working as a missionary in Hubei, and then Hunan, and then Sichuan. He was able to establish over 100 mission stations in the two provinces of Hubei and Hunan alone. And he also moved to Hankou. He was able to do work in Wuhan. And set up, if you don't know Wuhan, that's the place where basically that changed the world with the coronavirus. So he was able to go in and set up a missionary station in the city of Wuhan and preach the gospel there for the very first time. He worked together with the Central China Tract Society and had handed out extensive tracts. And he had a very good way of sharing about it, because many Chinese felt that you're the Westerner. Why are you out here, you know, beating the streets yourself? You should just hire someone else to do it for you. And he just wouldn't. He would not delegate those kind of jobs. He felt that it was a privilege to personally minister face to face, even when it was a threat to his life, because there were many Chinese that did not want him to be there. They didn't want him sharing his religion. And so his life sometimes was threatened, but he stayed out there. He beat the streets and he shared tracts and preached the gospel, starting schools, clinics, hospitals, and mission stations. So, I mean, just a really phenomenal guy, but not just the work that he did. Oftentimes, you kind of get this dichotomy in society. Individuals that are able to do and individuals that are able to tell. Individuals that are good at storytelling and those that are good at doing the things that stories are told about. There's this saying, I can't remember who said it, but they said, either live a life worth writing about, read a book worth reading, or write a book worth writing, or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah, that's either live a life. I have to look it up. I'll find it here
live
in a minute.
What you write and live a life of writing your life.
No, that wasn't it either. Not even close.
But I know. Basically, that's how you just summed it.
Oh, write a book worth reading or live a life worth writing about. That's what it is. And okay. So. Usually you get one of those two, right? Someone that's either lived an amazing life that's worth writing about, or someone who's written amazing books that are worth reading. But you don't often get people that can do both. And that now, was and Griffith John.
With Griffith John, he did some amazing things, but for me, the strength of A Voice in the Darkness is not what he did. It's the revelations that he got because of what he did. There's revelation that he had of God and of salvation and of the Bible that he had because of his lived experiences. There's nothing wrong with a pastor standing up and preaching. Of course, that's not what I'm saying. But there is a different level of revelation, I believe, or a different kind, maybe not level, but a different kind of revelation that Griffith John had because he was speaking from lived experience and having to trust God in the faith of just complete impossibility. And so for me, the Griffith John book, A Voice in the Darkness, you don't even have to be interested in missions to read that. I mean, that is just a profound book with so much truth in it.
Yeah, by the way, that quote was from Benjamin Franklin, 1738. So it's kind of in our time frame, like that 1700s. It says this: either write something worth reading or do something worth writing about. And that was Griffith John did both, which is very rare. As did another man, which was George Stott, who we did our second book about, and that book has been selling really well as well.
Yeah, we found out about this one, and we tried to find some of his writings. We were actually in the UK, and we were doing some filming for Chasing Legacy, and the only thing that we seemed to be able to find was a letter at Cambridge University. And so it didn't say what the letter was about. It didn't give any information. It just said George Stott letter. And we thought, well, what can it hurt? Let's just go see it. So we go and it's like, you know, it's actually Cambridge University. So we just feel so out of place because there's all of these, you know, even as a Brit, I'm out of place because all of these people are just kind of, the building is just amazing. We walk in this library and it just feels like it's been there for centuries. It was an amazing experience. And we're taken and handed, you know, in white gloves, we're handed this letter. You couldn't read a word. Somehow we managed between us to like decipher. And we learned that it was actually a rejection letter from Cambridge University, or at least it was a plea from somebody that he was very close to Cambridge, begging that he might be able to be received at Cambridge University. We learned that George Stott, actually at 19 years old, had a farming accident that resulted in having his lower leg amputated. And so he just kind of had a wooden leg that he would use. And then he applied for Cambridge University and he was rejected. And so it seemed that one thing after another was going wrong for him. And then he decided to apply to be a missionary to China. He heard Hudson Taylor. So he went to speak to Hudson Taylor and said, you know, I mean to be a missionary to China. And Hudson Taylor said, what makes you think that you can go? I mean, you only have one leg. And famously, now to us, he says, well, people with two legs don't seem to be going, so I suppose I must. And his saying was, the lame shall take the prey. And he really had this mentality of conquer. Like, he really had this against all odds. There's stories where the Chinese that would regularly post placards of dates that they were going to be killed. You know, he would chase them away from his door by taking off his wooden leg and hopping after them. And just an amazing guy. His wife, Grace, set up a girls' school. They were accused of taking Chinese orphans and using their organs to make medicine and just horrendous things. But maybe you want to talk about when Joe is today because of this one guy and his wife.
A lot of people may not know about the city of Wenzhou, but Wenzhou is considered to be the Jerusalem of China. It has more Christians per square kilometer than any other city in China. And they are said to have one church building for every square kilometer. That was prior to 2019 and the increase of persecution that we've seen under the current regime. But those Christians are the direct result of the very first foreigner to ever go there, the very first foreigner to ever preach the gospel in the city of Wenzhou, which is a port city. And he went there. He was together with his wife. His wife actually wrote a book, and there are some quotes and some writings from him, and it's just a phenomenal, fascinating story of endurance, perseverance, preaching the gospel against all odds, against death, against attacks. The mission station that he started was attacked and the area was burned down and they came in and they would start all over again. And because he didn't give up, because he persevered, today, Wenzhou is one of the most wealthy cities in all of China, one of the most productive cities in all of China, and has more Christians than any other city in China. So there's a reason why. And this story, this book, the writings, I believe, without being, without exaggeration, can change your life. So there are three books. The latest one that we're coming out with right now is the Terrible Red Dwarf. The first one that we came out with that I highly encourage you to get is A Voice in the Darkness. And then the second one is The Lame Shall Take the Prey. These three books are phenomenal books for your library. You can get them in ebook format or you can get them in soft cover format. They're available. The printed version is only available on Amazon. So if you go to amazon.com and look them up, you'll find them there. Or you can go to our website. If you forget about them, you can go to our website, either backtojerusalem.com or our printing arm, which is Underground Publishing House. So you can go to the Underground Publishing House and also find those books.
Yeah, just so people know, the website address is undergroundpublishing.co.uk for Underground Publishing. But if you go to our B2J website, you'll see in the store, all the books are there, and then it'll just send you directly over to Underground. For Amazon, you can go to your own Amazon in your country. So the books are available on all Amazon storefronts or all Amazon country websites, I should say, if you want the printed version.
And we also have these books available, which are not available for print in the Chinese language. We've printed these books in Chinese for the very first time. So if you know somebody from China, if you have a Chinese friend, you can purchase this as a gift for them in the Chinese language. And the Chinese version is exclusively available at undergroundpublishing.co.uk. So again, those are exclusive offers on our website. And I believe is it cheaper on our website than on Amazon?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can go to our website and purchase the ebook for a lower price than on Amazon. So if you go to undergroundpublishing.co.uk, there you will find a lower price, same book, and in Chinese. Because not only are these books blocked in China, because Amazon sells books in China, they also don't make these Chinese books available for purchase on Amazon.com. I want to thank you so much, Bethany, for joining us. Thanks for reading, by the way, the first chapter and the introduction for The Terrible Red Dwarf.
Until next time, the next book we have.
Yes, until next time.
Hear my voice.
And thank you so much for joining us for another Back to Jerusalem podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of China. God bless.